Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Faith All Over the Place, a little conversational podcast about faith that could. That's what we're going to call it from now on.
It does.
Episode number 14 now, and coming to you from pre-recorded from the glorious Sonoran Desert on what should be a monsoonish day here. I'm Stephen Cruiser, and joining me, as always, from the woods of Georgia, and what I'm sure is much more humid than here.
Oh yeah,
where it's much more, is my good friend Chris Queen. Hello, Chris. How are you?
Hey, how are you?
I am good, and I think we're going to get some rain. Had a night. It was cooler this morning, though. It was like in the mid-80s when I went out for my walk, so I'm taking it.
We've been on a roughly 50% chance of rain all week, and it's kind of, you know, just that summertime pattern where the meteorologists are scared to guess too heavily, so they just say 50%.
No, it rained all day.
May or may not, you know, you never know.
It rained most of the day here yesterday. It was glorious monsoon stuff. Nice. That nice slow rain where it goes from being almost 100 degrees to like 65 degrees.
Yeah, and yeah.
That's my favorite. So, as to everybody, anybody new to this or those of you who have listened, you know that Chris and I, this is just a conversational thing. How this usually works is we don't do show prep the way Kevin and I do show prep for Unwoke. You know, Kevin and I do show prep. We go over looking what's going on that week. And then Chris and I are just like, oh, you know this. Oh, we thought about this. So I thought about something during church this week, during Mass. And there was nothing related to in the sermon that day. I was just like, my mind was wandering, even though the sermon was great. I told you about that.
But
I was thinking about Jesus telling people not to judge, lest we be judged. And the lest doesn't mean like in case. It means we're going to be judged.
Right.
We know that. It's not called travel day or relocation day. It's called judgment day.
That's right.
And I'm thinking, like, I've always thought that's one of the hardest ones. And I'm writing a whole bit about it. I told Chris some of it. I did, you know, the bits aren't that funny when they're not fleshed out yet, but this has got potential already, I think. And when I was just thinking about that, social media and everything. And here's, okay, I'm going to let Chris in a second here, but the way it all started is everything on social media with the tension and the Dems and everything has been like harshing my mellow a little lately. My brand has always been to be chill and not let it disturb me that much. And I'm going like, oh God, I'm letting it get to me lately. And then I am being judgmental. And I'm just like, and then I went, it's a good thing the apostles didn't have to put up with social media.
Especially like, Peter.
So think about it, though. It's like, think about how easy it is to just default to being judgmental.
Oh, absolutely.
When you're going over the news, especially if you're looking at it on social media. It's such a challenge. And what if it's a deliberate divine challenge? I think that's maybe where I was going with this. I wanted to throw that out.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of like talking about divine appointments. Sometimes those divine appointments are the tests of our faith.
Yeah. And what if this is one big, the Lord's going, you know, Twitter. Yeah. It's like back in 2000, when did Twitter start? 2006?
Five or six.
Five or six,
something like that.
The Lord said, yeah, I got something for him. And I don't, but if it is a test.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know the best way to respond to it because I don't know how you work it when you look at social media, but Twitter is my news feed for work.
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And so you can't avoid it. It's like, I think you and I have talked about this in the past. I envy the people who go, well, you know, I'm just going to get off Twitter. I'm just not going to do
right.
social media. Well, bully for right. you. I'm like, that's
when,
like
when it's an integral part of your job, you can't just drop out.
Yeah, you know, that's like talking to a lumberjack and saying, well, you know, I'm just going to avoid falling trees.
I'm gonna give up trees.
Yeah. I honestly wish I had a better blueprint for how to work on it because it's
right.
Because being judgmental. I don't know if you've ever met someone who's not. I certainly haven't.
No.
I think it's a human default.
Absolutely.
And you know, it's sometimes it's on a grand scale. Sometimes it's on a, oh, look what she's wearing. You know, that kind of scale.
Right,
but that's still judgment. That's still being judgy.
Right.
And I don't know. I'm trying to figure out. I'm no biblical scholar, but I'm trying to figure out, does that mean that we're never supposed to be judgmental, or we're always supposed to be cognizant of being judgmental? Because I don't think we are.
Right.
Are you ever? Or I mean, obviously we are a lot of times, but are you always aware of when you're being judgmental of someone else?
I wouldn't say I'm always aware of it. I would say I'm aware of it more often than not, because I have to catch myself or kind of check myself in it and confess that sin and be like, all right, Lord, I did it. I was judgy again. And that's, you know, I think that's a little bit of being self-aware too. People who aren't self-aware don't realize when they're judging and how they're judging people.
There's a lot of it is being in the moment too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, we have habits, and once you're doing habits and routines, when you're in a habit and a routine, that's not always being in the moment.
Right.
Sometimes you're just going by rote, doing things perfunctorily, and then and part of that is, for both of us, is reading the freaking news when we start the day, and it gets really ugly. So I don't know if there is a point to this other than saying, like, if you and I just hash out ways to maybe become more aware of it in the moment. Maybe I know that I haven't been doing something lately that a priest told me to do years ago. This guy was my confessor at St. Monica for years. And he said, when you sit down to your desk, that's the say a prayer before you start working.
Mm.
And I do pray before I work, but not when I don't do another prayer when I sit down to the desk anymore. And I think that's a starting point here before.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But like as I'm situating myself in the workspace, there's a crucifix with three rosaries on it sitting on my desk here. So it's not like
I don't have
a reminder. And a memento mori skull, by the way.
Nice.
So I think that's one way to start maybe reorienting myself before I take the plunge and to calm everything down and then to be aware of that. And I hadn't thought of that on my own. I thought of that while we were just talking about this.
Right. And yet, I think surrounding yourself with reminders helps. Like, I mean, like I'm wearing a Christian T-shirt, and so anytime I'm in the bathroom or where I can look in the mirror, I see a cross and a scripture reference on the front of my shirt. I have list of scriptures that talks about the work that Jesus does in our lives that's sitting right behind my monitor, and you know, just having reminders.
Yeah,
help you. You know,
I want to get some Christian/Catholic T-shirts. I follow a couple accounts on Instagram that have them, and I was like, these would be cool to have wear around. I mean, it's Tucson, so it's like I'm in a safe space. It's not like anybody's going to go, oh, how horrific that you're.
right.
So I'm kind of surrounded by Catholics here.
I get several ads on Instagram, mainly on Instagram for Christian t-shirt companies. There's one that's based here in Atlanta that is called Jesus Loves You. And they have a lot of different designs, but their main shirt is just a simple Helvetica, you know, print on a solid color shirt that just says Jesus Loves You. And that's kind of what they've become famous for.
There's this bodybuilding priest I follow on Instagram, and he's always got some, like, his hashtag is fit for the kingdom.
I love that.
And he's always got some really killer Catholic shirt on when he's working out. Like, I gotta find out where Father Capo's hookup is.
The shirt that I'm wearing today is actually a like a benefit shirt for Texas flood relief. You know, a certain amount of the proceeds from the shirt go to benefit, because the company's based in Texas, and the guy, I think, grew up in that area. So I thought that was kind of cool.
You know, it's easy for us to, like, bag on social media. I don't think you and I really do that. I mean, it's not like we know that all social media isn't bad, but we're talking about social media presenting a challenge today. And, you know, as a Christian. But also, then you just brought up, okay, hey, look where I found my shirts. Okay, right. I found that on social media. I found, and there was something I told you about yesterday that is really cool lately about the new algorithm over on X. I'm on my home feed now, because my home feed's a hot mess. I have a lot of followers, and I follow a fair amount of people too.
Right.
But the algorithm, since I've been responding to some Catholic accounts recently, and I do have an entire tweet deck column for faith stuff.
Oh, nice.
And so the algorithm started to give me a lot more, mostly Catholic stuff, but a lot of other people of faith, a lot of prayer requests coming through, I told you, lately.
Oh, wow.
And so now I'm scrolling through to just hit some of the prayer requests.
Right, right.
So that's been a real positive, and that's very helpful to remind you while being on social media. So if you go out, so I'm telling you right now, if you're using TweetDeck or anything, if you want to game the system a little bit, start responding to people of faith. Start responding to faith-based accounts, and you're going to start seeing a lot more of them in your feed. And I do think that in the modern era, that's one of the greatest things, is you get a global community praying for you.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, like you and I have discussed this, you know, we do with our colleagues all the time. If we need prayers for something, we hit up our colleagues.
Right.
And, you know, 25 years ago, you wouldn't have been calling people all over the country asking them to pray for you.
That is so true. That's amazing that God can use something like social media that can also be such a dangerous and scary thing sometimes, that God can use anything for his glory, and social media can come through on that a lot of times.
And that's always been the case. You know, it's like, okay, big rallies, you know, in the days when, you know, Jesus and the disciples had to be nomads and walk from place to place. Well, you could have a good big rally, you could have a bad big rally. You know, when people get together in a group, it's either a gathering or a mob. It's
right.
Television, you know, modern media, the same thing. How are you going to use it? Some people figured out. The aforementioned priest I told you about, who was my confessor for 10 years, he also ran a production and company in Hollywood called Family Theater Productions.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is still there. And another priest I know, who I've tried to get on with us just once. I'm going to try again, because I was just in touch with somebody who works for Family Theater Productions.
Yeah.
That's a great point. Anything can be used for God's glory. And when we start to think immediately negatively about, oh, this is a bit, hey, maybe there's an opportunity there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's a big thing to do, is to look at things that you might rail against and say, nope, maybe this is an opportunity for me to be a better influence, for me to reflect the glory of God.
This is why we have these conversations, everyone, so we can figure things out along the way. And I think we're going to have someone from your church on again next week, aren't we?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hopefully. I got to reach out to him and see what day is best for him.
All right, and I'm going to hit up Ed Morrissey again. So I want to tell them what I told you about the Sunday's Gospel and the Chosen. Should I? Because I like what Chris said. Chris said God is our program director. So this is I go to Mass on Sunday, and the Gospel reading is Jesus visits Martha, Mary, and Lazarus, and then Martha's hustling food and drinks to everyone, and Mary's just listening to Jesus, and Martha has a little fit of pique, and Jesus says, yeah, you're distressed, you're confused, or whatever, and he said, but Mary has chosen the better part.
Yeah.
And then the priest, who was the pastor at the Cathedral of St. Augustine here in Tucson, Father Alan, he gave one of the best sermons on that gospel that I've ever heard. It was wonderful. It was a long thing. I'm not going to complete, but it's like, are you a Mary or are you Martha? You should be both, but you should be a Mary first. That was the essence of it. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
He said, being a Mary first teaches you how to be a better Martha, prayerful, then service. And
yeah.
And it was a great gospel, and it's like it stuck with me. I thought about it a lot during the day. And then as I'm putting together the briefing that night, during the final part of it, I always go over to my recliner, turn on the TV, and finish with the TV on. And I hadn't watched The Chosen in at least 2 months.
Right.
Had no idea where I was. I hit it. I'm like 3 minutes into the episode I was on, so I said, play from the beginning. I start playing, and within 5 minutes, it becomes apparent Jesus is on his way to visit Martha and Mary and Lazarus.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, oh, this is perfect. And as you and I discussed, they handled that very well.
Yeah, definitely.
It was wonderful. This is what's good about The Chosen when they do stuff like this. It showed the very human sisterly annoyance.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Absolutely.
Because we lose a lot of that context, I think, sometimes about, you know, these are because they become like two-dimensional characters for us in a book.
Right, right.
And even though we know it's a living book, I don't think we always think of them that way.
Right. Yeah, that's true. That's one of the things. And I always point out that I've always said for the longest time that Martha gets a bad rap. Yes. And because I think a lot of times I can tend to identify with Martha. But, you know, after that, when Lazarus dies, you know, Martha is the one who comes to Jesus and
yes.
and says, yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is coming into the world. And yes. I don't know. I could be wrong. I don't know if she was the first one outside of the apostles to admit to that or not. I don't know. I don't want to.
Thinking about it, I think you're right on that. Yes, she's the one who gets it.
Yeah, yeah.
And gets it all.
Yeah, yeah.
I think maybe her and Peter are the first two.
I think so too.
If you know, again, we're not theologians, but we are devout Christians.
Yes.
You're right. She understands the totality of it. And it's very clear. The way they do all of that until Thomas spazzes out.
Yeah, right.
The way they handle everything about Martha, Mary, and Lazarus is wonderful.
Oh, absolutely.
And
terrific performances as well.
Very, very good performances. And I will talk about being judgmental. I'll lay off the accents. I'm like, what are you trying to do here? Are we trying to be Middle Easterners? Are we trying to be from Tijuana? What I can't tell where they want. They're all over the place.
One of the things too that's interesting about those actors, Mary, Martha, and Lazarus, the woman who plays Martha is Jewish. The girl who plays Mary is evangelical Christian, and the guy who plays Lazarus is Greek Orthodox.
Oh,
so that's just kind of fascinating to me.
I like the stories about how a lot of people on that cast either came to faith. Not all of them were, you know, devout. Jonathan Rumi's story is great. He's
a
profound conversion to belief. And he's very popular over on the Halo app now, leading prayers all the time. That's one of the things that's been so magical about that, the way it started. I think, right. you know, the way it started with them self-financing. And then the way it blew up, and you know, they had a full on Hollywood premiere for the final season.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. And it's they're doing a lot of they're filming the crucifixion scenes in Italy, and so they're doing a lot of premieres for the current season while they're there.
Oh, that's cool.
That was kind of interesting to read about that and see some of the pictures from
media
accounts.
Once again, using media for God's glory.
Absolutely.
If God could only help them with the accents.
That's right.
It's okay. Anybody who does voices or dialogues or anything or accents knows. And I got my SAG card as a voice over person, as a voice
right.
actor.
Right.
Accents are difficult. That's why people get absolutely. Coaches in them. Because the thing with the accents is I can do a variety of accents, but consistency with the accent, with the dialogue, with the dialect, with the regional dialect. Like, I played a British guy in a play once. I played Jeffrey Duncan in Wendy Wasserstein's The Sisters Rosenzweig.
Okay.
And I do a really good Brit, but I know that what I probably did like 7 British accents throughout.
Right, right. Yeah, like, exactly, exactly. And that's what's so frustrating as a Southerner is how bad the Southern accents can be on shows and movies.
Have you ever seen, I wish I could remember what it was. It was a Brit show where they had one of the Brits doing an American Southern accent, and it was torture.
It was
absolute freaking torture.
There's a guy on Instagram, and this is so totally, we're so wandering off topic here. He's called The Accent Guy, and he's British, and he does accents from all over the world, and his generic American and his Southern American accent really kind of get on my nerves.
Well, yeah, because like Brits
are the ones that he doesn't quite.
Well, Brits think that the only thing you have to do to do an American is to overemphasize your R's,
mm-hmm.
and Americans think the only thing you have to do to do a Brit is to underemphasize your R's.
Yeah, exactly, that's true.
We both have a rather simplistic approach to it.
Exactly.
But. We always talk about The Chosen here. The Chosen, a wonderful, absolutely wonderful. I'm trying to get my mother who still can't figure out how to get Netflix working. You know, somebody has to get it working for it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I figured that this would be a good several weeks of viewing for her.
Oh, absolutely.
And I'm going to tell my sister that. But again, using media for God's glory, this is what we're trying to do here.
Mm-hmm.
How well we're doing it. We're doing a modern media platform, podcasting, just to talk about God, faith, and look, our timer. I started the timer late. We were about 5 minutes in, and then I started for 15 minutes. I think we've gone at least 20 minutes. We're trying to keep
it tight. I was going to say, we're probably...
And we talked about what we wanted to talk about. It's a good thing the apostles didn't have to deal with social media. I'm not saying that they wouldn't handle it. They would have handled it, but they didn't have to. Chris and I were being a little snarky about it yesterday. I said, you know, it was easy to not be judgmental when we were an agrarian society and you only ever saw your family and your cows. It's like being judgmental about being judgmental about being. It's like there's sometimes you're. It's something. It's like Inception.
Right. Yeah. I was gonna say it gets meta if you're not careful.
Very, very meta, and you're in a Christopher Nolan movie about judgment. All of a sudden, it's a bit. But you know,
I think that could be an interesting concept for him to tackle.
I would love to just have drinks with Christopher Nolan once, and throughout the night, go, you should try this.
Uh huh.
And he'd be like, yeah.
Or I wonder how many ideas he would go, well, yeah, I've already thought about that.
Yeah, I wonder what his notebook looks like, his idea notebook.
It's probably, it would probably blow our minds.
I wonder if he has normal conversations with people. He doesn't seem to me like that kind of guy. He seems more like a David Lynch type who would be like, well, you know, humans are cool, but I don't really know what to do around them.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, yeah. He couldn't talk about baseball or... his favorite foods or, you know, things like that.
Yeah, he doesn't seem like a small talk dude.
Maybe
he is, though. There we go, being judgmental again. That's not really being judgmental. That's not really being judgmental. That's more being presumptive.
Mm-hmm.
Which leads to judgment often.
Right. But because you can do it without passing judgment, but it's rare.
Then again, even if you're praising someone, that's still judgment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You
know,
if you say someone's smart, if you say someone's talented, that's a judgment call.
Oh, yeah. You can make positive judgments about people.
Yeah. There's a lot, as the kids like to say, there's a lot to unpack when it comes to that one Bible verse.
That's true.
And I think it's the hardest one of them all. Mm-hmm. Turn the other cheek. We all throughout our lives deal with perceived slights at work real and perceived at work.
Yep.
That we do, this we do, we try that. But the whole judge not lest ye be judged.
Sometimes even love your enemies is easier than judge not.
Yes. I think it's a lot. That's the hill I'll die on is that. That's the hardest of all the things.
Right, right.
that Jesus said. And I think that's the most difficult. But we learn, we try, we keep.
There's a reason for the phrase live and learn. because you can't learn if you're not living.
Live, learn, and live, live and learn again. Live, learn, yep. and learn again.
Yes. Yes.
Keep learning.
Sometimes it is relearning the same things you've learned thousands of times before.
Pretty much a story of my life right there. It's like people who learn their lessons from youth don't tend to go into stand-up. It's just really
neat. Yeah, I get it. That makes sense.
Just, I got stuff to work really out here. All right. Well, everybody, thank you very much for listening. We really appreciate this. And we were talking about a regular schedule before this. I'm just looking. I think we have a plan going forward for all of the mm-hmm. multimedia. We'll see. Got a couple of guests on the horizon. Hopefully, we'll have what's your friend's name?
Trey Bailey. I'll call him out right now and say, hey, Trey, we're going to get you on the show.
We'll get him on the show hopefully next week. We figured it's time to have Ed Morrissey back on to talk about something different, not to just rehash the episode, the legendary Lost episode. In my defense, the whole reason that I screwed that recording up is because Zoom had just completely changed their interface.
Mm-hmm.
And the record button was on the opposite end.
Yikes.
Of the page, and I accidentally just nuked it while we were recording, shortly into the recording. So it was, yes, it was user error, but it was also, if it ain't broke, don't fix it error.
Mm-hmm.
Just leave things the way they are. So we're going to try to get Mr. Morrissey back on. And I think there's been enough lag time since when Rabbi Barclay was on with Paula and Lincoln that we could probably mm-hmm. have him on here.
Oh, that'd be great.
To talk about different stuff, too. We don't have to just talk about politics. We can talk
that'd
about
be good.
The intersections of Judaism and Christianity, especially in these troubling times for Judaism, for Jews around the world. So it'd be somewhat political. So I think that's where we're going to go with this. We'd like to thank you very much. Thank you, Chris Queen, for taking time out of your busy day.
Oh, yeah. It's always a pleasure.
I'm going to go... trying to figure out why my headphones aren't working sometimes. That's my big thing right now. But I have a thing. I got a thing about Colbert to write too. I don't know if you saw on Stories
Claim. I said
this is going to be my Epstein for the next week.
I have a feeling you've got a lot to say.
We've had people talk going off about Epstein. Well, and they keep giving me a lot to say. If his fans hadn't been so vocal and ridiculous and wouldn't continue being so vocal and ridiculous, I would have shut up about this already. But it's just too easy. It's just they're just serving it. They're just really – it's like playing T-ball now.
It's almost like they know what they're doing. They know that they're opening the door for us to jump in.
You talk about self-awareness. I really don't think that the left is that self-aware.
I think one of the hallmarks
of the left is a stunning lack of self-awareness.
Definitely.
It's part of what you have to do to believe the things that they believe. I don't think that they're self-aware at all. I think they think that they're making a point and they're really making the opposite point. Mm-hmm. What I'm having fun with. And like I said, I wrote the thing yesterday or something. I said, I'm having a blast watching them think that this is playing. It's just, it's really entertaining for me. This is the most entertaining Colbert has ever been for me.
Look, for real. If I can't stand him.
He is funny.
Never liked him.
He is funny when he's not biased. There was a great line once. Remember when Obama sent the pallet of cash to Iran?
Uh-huh.
And Colbert that night in his monologue said, some of us are calling it a ransom because we know what the word ransom means.
It's simple, straightforward.
See, you can be funny when you're nonpartisan you're going after both sides, but... So he is a funny guy who chose to have it just all killed by being hyperpartisan.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
I would never in my life think of going on stage and just going super MAGA. You know, I don't like to do political stuff on stage that much anyway. I don't think because politics is so divisive. And so once you go on stage, once you do anything political, you're risking alienating half your audience.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a real entertainer and if you're a real comedian and he gets paid a fortune, but that doesn't mean you want to entertain the entire audience.
And well, for a long time, I have said that I just don't want politics in my entertainment, even if I agree with it.
Yeah.
you know, I just, I mean, so entertainment is meant to be getting away.
Escapist.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's supposed to be escapist, and I don't want especially don't want politics in my sport.
Yeah.
Before we go, who's the quarterback you wrote about today? I forgot to read it. I haven't gotten to read it yet.
The pitcher. Pitcher. Pitcher his name is Rich Hall.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I do know about Rich Hill. Yeah, 45 years old, starting for the first time this season.
Yeah, I do know about Rich.
Yeah, he was with the Dodgers for like four years.
He was with the Dodgers for a long time. He was good when he was with. He had flashes. I mean, he was a good pitcher for a long time. But I didn't. You know, I thought he'd been retired for like 15 years at this point.
Yeah, it's yeah. So four seasons is a long stretch when you have been with 14 teams in 21 seasons.
Yeah, it's the Dodgers pitching staff is so injured right now. They're going to be like,
oh gosh.
So they're going to be calling to the front office and asking Koufax how he feels. That's where I read their injured reserve list. Their injured list other day. It looks like War and Peace. It is hideous. And that I would say 2/3 of the people on the injured list are pitchers.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's wow. Brutal. That's hard.
It's
that's
absolutely
tough.
And they're still in first place.
Wow.
But
Georgia had 10 pitchers go in the MLB draft this year. I'm wondering who we're going to have this season.
This has nothing to do with the Lord, or maybe it does because the Lord does love baseball.
Amen. The holy game.
I think it's because pitchers have gotten so big. I think there's so much stress on the joints from the pitchers being like 6'4", all of them.
You know,
pitchers used to be 5'8", 5'9".
Uh-huh.
And I think these big guys throwing ever harder at weirder angles and extra stress on the joints, I think they're all going to keep getting injured.
I think that's true.
But that's just my thought there. Okay, no, we're done. We're good. We're officially done now. But I believe rambling is the nature of this. But that is, we are on brand by doing that.
Amen.
And so we're going to do that again soon. And thank you all for listening. And we will, in theory, talk to you next week.
See y'all.